and we aim to remind them. To Karimov and the Constitution!
The soldiers pounded their boots and flagpoles on the ground and roared,
To Karimov and the Constitution! To Karimov and the Constitution!
A smile spread across Nikolai's face. These were his people. Royal blood or not, Nikolai had come from a tiny nomadic village on the steppe and spent his entire life fighting for respect. He'd been an errand boy for a tailor, and he'd polished shoes for a cobbler. He'd bartered for dance and sword fighting lessons by trading his time and his services. So these men who stood before him, these ordinary soldiers, were his brethren. But then the thundering of hooves drowned out the shouts of the Decembrists. The men in the square all turned away from Obolensky toward the sound.
No!
Nikolai said. It was not, as the Decembrists had hoped, reinforcements from other garrisons. It was Pasha's cavalry and infantry. They were close to 10,000 strong. They were still some distance away, but Nikolai felt as if their horses were already stampeding him. Because the Decembrists were now outnumbered by more than 3 to 1. Chapter 72. Vika rode to Pasha's left as he led the cavalry into Peter's Square. Yuliana rode to his right, unwilling to accede to his requests to stay behind, or at least ride behind the front line. Their horses had to tread carefully on the icy cobblestones. The Decembrists were lined up in formation in front of the statue of Peter the Great. The forces Pasha commanded were much more daunting.
Infantry!
Pasha shouted.
Surround the square! But maintain distance from the rebels, and do not fire unless ordered to.
His commanders snapped to action, and their regiments marched to take strategic places around Peter's Square.
I want light artillery there.
Pasha pointed to a spot in front of one of the infantry units, facing Peter the Great.
And here,
he said, indicating a line to shield where he and his horse currently stood. They would be able to see the Decembrists from this vantage point, but remain protected by several regiments of infantry, along with the light artillery.
Cavalry will ride to flank the rebels,
Pasha said.
I want the Decembrists to have to look up at us.
The officers and their soldiers marched off to their places. Vika looked from Pasha to the square and back to Pasha again.
Very impressive, Your Imperial Highness.
Pasha gave her a curt nod. A serious commander of troops. But a smile curved at the corner of his mouth.
Count Miloradovich, where are you?
Pasha asked. The Count, a war hero who, like Obolensky and Volkonsky, was admired by the troops, hurried to Pasha and saluted.
Speak with Obolensky, Pasha said. And if possible, address the men. They can still change their minds. I will let them walk away.
On his right, Yuliana snorted in disapproval. Pasha ignored her.
Yes, sir,
Miloradovich said. He saluted again, then marched toward the rebels' formations in the center of the square. Pasha turned to Vika.
Is Nikolai here?
She could feel the tug at her chest as she scanned the square.
I don't see him, but I feel him. Even if I couldn't, I know he'd be here. The Decembrists mean to put him on the throne. That means they are Nikolai's men. And Nikolai is not the sort to stand aside and leave the unhappy work to others. So yes, Nikolai is here.
Her heart beat faster, remembering the mazurka in the volcano dream. If only this scene were a dream too. Pasha began to run his hand through his hair, but stopped, as if he'd suddenly remembered he was being watched by thousands of his men.
Kill Nikolai,
Yuliana said to Vika. Vika took in a sharp breath of air, and everything inside her flipped upside down. Of course she knew it was more than a possibility that she would have to hurt Nikolai, perhaps even kill him. But a possibility was far different from a direct order spoken aloud, especially since the cuff would enforce it. Pasha steadied his horse beside her. He was a shade paler than usual.
Don't! Pasha!
Yuliana whipped her head around to glare at him.
You tried to show leniency last time by having Vika capture him. But Nikolai escaped the egg and tried to kill you again. We cannot count on being able to capture and contain him this time.
Pasha swallowed hard but nodded.
Vika, find Nikolai and...
His voice cracked.
Well, you heard Yuliana.
Everything inside Vika remained upside down. Her pulse throbbed inside her. In the middle of the square, Miloradovich spoke to Obolensky. The men puffed out their chests and stood with legs anchored wide. Hot clouds billowed where their breaths met the winter air. The discussion did not appear at all friendly. Vika's horse shifted beneath her.
Have you located Nikolai?
Yuliana asked. Vika had to do it. She had chosen Pasha's side, and not just because a bracelet burned her, but she would try her best to do this her way. She could at least have that much integrity.
I'm narrowing it down.
Vika concentrated on the far right of the Decembrist's formation, where the air seemed to be disturbed not by weather, but by magic. Miloradovich spun away from Obolensky and climbed up onto the Thunderstone.
Listen, my fellow soldiers!
A shot rang out before he had a chance to finish the sentence. Soldiers yelled. Miloradovich toppled to the ground. Obolensky reacted immediately, unsheathing his sword and holding it above him so it glinted in the early morning light. Then he ran it through Miloradovich's body.
Oh, mercy!
Vika said.
Murder! Treason!
Pasha's troops shouted in shock. The Decembrists began to yell too, and drew their weapons. The sudden outburst surprised the horses in Pasha's cavalry, and they jostled against one another while shrieking. Their riders tried to calm them. But a few of the horses slipped on the ice, casting off Pasha's soldiers as they fell. It sent the rest of the cavalry into even more disarray. The Decembrists aimed their muskets.
Forget finding Nikolai right now, Vika thought. We need a distraction to give our men time to regroup. I'll be back,
she said to Pasha, and she abandoned her horse and evanesced into the air, rematerializing on a cloud. From up here, she could see all the troops clearly. The Decembrists stood in two formations, a square and a rectangle, in front of the statue of Peter the Great and the Nyevar. They were surrounded on all sides by Pasha's cavalry and infantry, other than a small gap along the river. And Pasha and Yuliana sat on their horses on the far side of the square, behind a line of light artillery. Vika hid herself in the folds of the cloud and threw up her arms.
I need a storm, a ferocious one.
The wind howled in answer to her command and shot into the clouds around her, stirring them into a gray frenzy. The clouds spread across the sky like a blanket of gray fleece, and grumbled with thunder in their bellies. Ice like liquid silver swirled around Vika's torso, stronger than she'd ever felt the weather before. A blizzard whipped around her skirt. Snowflakes drifted from her fingertips. She'd become what she'd once worn only as a costume. She was Lady Snow. She whipped sashes of snow from her blizzard skirt and hurled them, one after another, and they grew as they traveled, changing from small arcs to a full storm. She inhaled deeply and blew with all her might at the Decembrists below, and her breath transformed into bitter, blistering wind that screamed as it tore through the sky. The clouds around her, too, burst open, unleashing lightning and sleet, needles of fire and ice pelting down from above.
Pasha wanted the Decembrists to look up at us, after all.
And so they did. Eyes wide at the surprise storm, or perhaps afraid of magic, their muskets lowered in a frantic attempt to hide from the blizzard that seemed to attack only their section of Peter's Square. In the meantime, Pasha's cavalry calmed their horses and reformed their lines. The liquid silver of Vika's bodice chilled the air until it dropped to near Arctic temperature. She continued to stoke the storm by adding more from her skirt. Each time she took a sash, more snowflakes flurried to take its place. She was eternal winter.
Ironic, Vika thought, for a girl born of a volcano.
Within seconds, the Decembrists were buried knee-deep in snow. And then the blizzard halted. Or rather, it continued to rage around Vika, but somehow failed to reach its targets on the ground.
What? No!
A shield, cast not of Vika's magic, pushed up against her storm. It was invisible to the ordinary eye, but from her vantage point so close to it, she could see its components, 1,000 clear umbrellas blocking the onslaught. Snow piled on top of the umbrellas, accumulating like icy white clouds, in contrast to the grey ones that had created them. Vika tried to throw more of her blizzard, but Nikolai's shield stubbornly persisted. When a mountain's worth of snow had piled on each umbrella, they began to tilt, all away from the Decembrists in the center of the square, and toward Pasha's forces around the edges.
Oh no! Watch out!
Vika yelled, even though there was no way they could hear her from so far away. The umbrellas fell sideways all at once, and an avalanche plummeted from the sky. Pasha's troops looked up and shouted. Some tried to dive out of the way, but gravity was unforgiving, and the torrents of snow smashed down on the soldiers. Suddenly, it was quiet. Pasha's men had been buried alive. Chapter 73 Nikolai looked up at Vika as his umbrellas caused an avalanche to crash down on Pasha's soldiers. Wind and snow whipped around her, stirring her hair into a frosty fire of fury. A warm flame inside Nikolai flared to match it. Her strength intimidated the Decembrists, yet it made Nikolai want her more. But then the chill of ambition washed over the flame, the wanting. Nikolai turned away from the sky. He had buried Pasha's soldiers, but his own men needed something more to encourage them. Reinforcements. But where to find them? Nikolai closed his eyes and smiled. Dolls, like at his fate. He could supplement the Decembrists' forces with toy soldiers. With eyes still shut, Nikolai recalled every toy shop he knew of within St. Petersburg. There was the one from which he'd acquired the servers for the Nevar fate, and another closer to Ekaterinsky Canal, where he'd purchased the marionettes during the game, when he was working on what would become the Jack and Ballerina. There were dozens of other stores, too. Nikolai clapped his hands twice. Across the city, wooden soldiers bolted awake. They creaked upright and oiled their metal joints. They gathered their muskets and their ammunition, straightened their felt hats, and marched, their boots upon the shelves like the staccato of gunfire, in response to Nikolai's summons. When the toy regiments were all assembled, their tinny bugles sounded. Their generals barked commands. The soldiers burst through shop fronts, leaving shattered glass in their wake. They sped through the air, and within minutes, an army in miniature had assembled alongside the Decembrists in Peter's Square. Nikolai's soldiers shifted their focus from Pasha's men, many of whom were beginning to dig themselves out of the snow, to the toy soldiers, who had begun to grow, rapidly, to full human size.
What in heaven's name?
But then, some of the men began to look from the statue of Peter the Great to the Nevar, to the toy soldiers. Nikolai could almost see the cogs and gears turning in their minds as they put it all together. The enchanted statue, his fate, and now this.
They're like the dolls from the Cesarevich's party on the river,
someone said. Nikolai stepped out then from where he'd been hidden among the troops. He looked enough like himself. That is to say, he wore his facade, so he did not appear as shadow, that some of the Decembrists recognized him. Not all of them, for Nikolai had not been famous before he became, well, infamous for surviving death. But a few soldiers here and there recognized him, perhaps from the occasional moments he waved from the window of his house.
Your Imperial Highness!
Those men said, and saluted. Nikolai stood before them.
It's true! I am Nikolai Alexandrovich Karimov Romanov.
He had decided to take the Romanov name, since the late Tsar had, in fact, been his father.
And I am the prince for whom you are fighting.
Murmurs spread through their ranks, and soon all the Decembrists had their hands to their hats in salute.
But I am not only the Grand Prince.
Nikolai said.
I am also an enchanter.
The Decembrists gaped. Some drew back, their shaking visible. Damn it. The aftermath of the Fates' food poisoning was how Ilya had convinced many of the men to join the Decembrists. These ranks before Nikolai included many who feared magic.
Don't be afraid of my powers, he said to them. Remember, the Cesarevich already has an imperial enchanter, and they've wreaked havoc on our city. But with my magic on your side, we will defeat them and take back our empire and our lives.
With a wave of his hand, Nikolai jolted the toy soldiers to life, bringing their wooden muskets away from their shoulders and into position to aim and shoot. And then Nikolai held his arms out to either side, palms up. Cold swirled in his core. Vika was Lady Snow on the outside, but Nikolai was Lord Frost on the inside. The chill from Aijana's energy surged, and Bolshevnoi Duplo's magic leaped to his fingertips. His entire body shuddered, almost unable to contain its force. The shadows of every soldier, man and toy, came apart from their owners and stood as separate entities. They had muskets too, silhouette ones, with silhouette bullets inside, but those bullets could kill a real man. Nikolai breathed heavily. It was the greatest enchantment he had ever cast. But other than a lingering shudder from the power of the magic, he wasn't tired at all. Bolshevnoi Duplo's strength now was extraordinary. Or perhaps it was Nikolai's own power, fueled by vengeance and fury. The Decembrist stared, not responding for a few seconds. And then Ilya shouted,
"To Karimov and the Constitution!"
A bear of a soldier in a nearby regiment grunted and yelled,
"To Karimov and the Constitution!"
All around them, men began to stand taller. Some even cracked smiles as they echoed the rallying cry, for the vision of an army of additional soldiers, even if they had been toys and shadows only moments ago, roused the battle lust in the Decembrists' souls. They were fighters, after all, not ordinary citizens, and the lure of victory pounded in their chests like snare drums.
"Now, gentlemen,"
Nikolai said, both to the real men and the magical ones.
"About face! Look our opponents in the eye!"
The men spun in unison. They all turned outward, so that their formations pointed at the infantry and cavalry surrounding them.
"Muskets at the ready!"
Nikolai commanded. Thousands of muskets snapped into position in their soldiers' hands, again demonstrating the beauty of military precision. These men had been drilled to the exacting standards of the late Tsar. On their own, they could load and fire close to 4 shots every minute. But with Nikolai's magic assisting them, they'd find their ability remarkably heightened to nearly double that.
"Add to the equation the new soldiers, as well as the fact that I will be conjuring and firing additional bullets without any muskets."
Pasha might still have more men, but Nikolai had more than enough weaponry and ammunition for a fight. Nikolai looked at his soldiers. Their jaws were set and eyes focused. He nodded his approval. Above, all but one of Vika's storm clouds vanished. The sun blazed down like midsummer, and the snow trapping Pasha's men began to melt and trickle away, leaving only damp cobblestones in its wake. They shook the water droplets off their boots and returned their attention back to Nikolai and his soldiers. And all the Decembrists' muskets pointed straight at them. Chapter 74. One of the officers in charge of the artillery line hurried to Pasha. Fear shone in his eyes, but he adhered to his duty.
"Your Imperial Highness, you should retreat to safety."
Pasha shook his head.
"I'm staying. This is my fight."
His knees trembled a little, but he pressed his legs tightly against his horse, so no one would see his uncertainty.
"Your Imperial Highness!"
Pasha gave him a look so stern, even Yuliana would approve.
"I'm staying."
His sister waved the officer over. She bent from her horse to whisper something in his ear.
Yes, Your Imperial Highness.
He darted a glance at Pasha, saluted to Yuliana, and ran back to his troops.
What was that about?
Pasha asked.
You'll see,
she said.
Trust me.
He considered pressing further, but Yuliana arched a brow, and he knew she would not relent. He looked up into the sky and touched the basalt pendant at his throat instead.
Vika! What can you see up there?
Her voice came through as crisply as if she were still on a horse beside him.
I'm sure you noticed the soldiers who've doubled the Decembrists' forces.
She said it matter-of-factly, possibly because magic was, actually, a regular fact of life for her, but also possibly for Pasha's benefit, to keep him calm.
They're preparing for attack, which under normal circumstances your men could take. But Nikolai will be able to fire those muskets faster than an ordinary soldier can reload.
Pasha again wanted to cram his hands into his hair, but he was the commander of an army at the front lines, no longer a boy who stayed at home at the palace while others fought his wars. He had to think clearly, despite facing a threat stranger than any his father must have faced. He took a deep breath.
So even though we're nearly 10,000 and they are only 5 or 6, we have to consider this an even fight. Right,
Vika said. Pasha swallowed the sour stomach acid that had crept up his throat.
All right. We'll try to hold our own down here on the ground. And you?
Pasha glanced at Yuliana and remembered her order to kill Nikolai.
Do what you need to, Vika. However you can.
Chapter 75. Vika looked down at the square and focused on Nikolai. He glanced up at the same time, as if the string that connected them tugged on him at that moment too. His gaze locked with hers.
Don't forget,
she mouthed. His shroud flickered for a second, only long enough for her to glimpse the shadow beneath. She didn't know if he'd done it on purpose, or if her message had pushed its way through to him for that brief moment. Irrational hope fluttered inside her. She collected herself a second later. Nikolai had had plenty of chances to back down. He hadn't, and now they were here, in the thick of a battle. Vika bent her head in one last gesture of mourning for the boy she'd known. Then she threw her arms out in front of her, and the winter wind rushed in their wake, whipping through the air, through the Decembrists, and knocking Nikolai to the ground. She struck her hands together and hurled ice crystals in his direction. The frost clung to him, and more layers piled on. Within seconds, Nikolai was frozen, completely suspended in a translucent block of ice. The bracelet tightened around her wrist, but it didn't burn, because Vika wasn't necessarily defying orders. In the rush of giving the command, Yuliana had forgotten she ought to specify when Vika was to kill Nikolai, and Pasha had only told Vika to do what she needed to do. Her entire body quivered. For an infinitesimal moment, Peter Square was quiet. But then Pasha's own artillery began to fire. Vika watched as Pasha whirled around to Yuliana.
What's happening?
He shouted, his voice coming through since he still clasped the necklace in his hand.
I commanded them to fire on the rebels,
Yuliana said. She was within range of the necklace, so Vika could hear.
It's time to finish this nonsense,
Vika gasped.
Those weren't my orders,
Pasha said.
Your orders weren't aggressive enough.
The soldiers loyal to the throne continued shooting at the Decembrists. But the Decembrists were not ill-prepared mercenaries. They were men from the same army who fired upon them. Their commanders shouted, and the rebels loaded and fired back. Bodies began to fall on either side. At the same time, some of the shadow soldiers turned and aimed at Nikolai, or rather, at the mass of ice. He must have been commanding them from within, for they opened fire and blasted off ragged chunks. They shot at him again, and more ice fell away. Vika flung more frost at him, but she couldn't replace quickly enough the pieces that were exploding away. Nikolai burst free from the inside, sending spears of ice through the air. They harpooned through some of Pasha's soldiers. Then he began snapping his fingers, conjuring bullets, hundreds at a time. He shot them at Pasha's forces, and, as Vika had warned, it was as if there were 10,000 Decembrists facing them. Despite heavy fire, Pasha held his horse steady.
"Vika!"
he shouted over the whiz of bullets and the battle cries of the men.
"We need to do something to break their formations!"
"I know, but what?"
"Shake them somehow!"
"All right,"
Vika nodded to herself.
"I'll literally shake them off their feet."
She stared down at the center of the square.
"Focus, focus, focus."
The ground near the Decembrists' boots began to ripple, like soft waves on a peaceful day along the Nivar. Some of the men lost their balance. Others continued to fire, though, including Nikolai with every snap of his fingers. But then the cobblestones cracked like bolts of thunder, and Vika's rocky waves grew, the crests higher and the lengths longer. The ground reared and hurled the Decembrists 10 feet in the air and every which way. When they landed, the men's bodies snapped. The shadow soldiers burst in puffs like smoke.
"Mercy!"
Nausea racked Vika's body with every broken bone and limp soldier. They lay one on top of another, a chaotic jumble of limbs and muskets and drums and flags. Vika had thought she would need this power if it came to war with foreign enemies. She'd never imagined she'd use it against Russia's own men. Her heart rose to her throat. She wanted to look away, but she couldn't. Pasha's army continued to fire. The Decembrists shrieked as their front lines collapsed. Some shoved their dead comrades out of the way and fumbled for their muskets again. But too many had fallen.
"Retreat! Retreat! Retreat!"
the Decembrists yelled. They stumbled over the dead bodies. More soldiers crumpled under fire. The ones still capable of running clambered over the piles of men, tripping over them onto the icy, blood-stained cobblestones, and fled past the statue of Peter the Great. They retreated onto the frozen Nivar. Pasha's infantry was quick to respond. They were already loading cannons and aiming at the river.
"No!"
Vika cried. Too late. The cannons fired and blasted through the Decembrists and the ice, flinging hundreds of men into the Nivar's frosty depths. They would freeze and drown in a matter of seconds. Even though they were Nikolai's men, Vika threw magic at the river, like fishing lines to haul the soldiers out. There was already too much death. The tea leaves had been right, and it seemed that she and Renata had failed at changing the prophecy. All Vika could do now was try to minimize the lives that were lost. From the sky, she attempted to keep the Nivar from freezing over, while she also dragged body after body out of the water, hundreds of invisible lines cast at once. But there were too many. She had so much power, and yet she could not save them all. Tears streamed down her face as winter prevailed and the Nivar froze over, hundreds of men trapped in the icy graveyard below.
"Cease fire!"
Pasha yelled. The relentless firing of cannons was deafening, and his officers didn't hear. More cannons fired, more ice collapsed, taking with it several hundred soldiers more. The toll would be at least 1,000, and Vika was nearly spent. Yet she renewed her attempts to save these men from drowning too. Nikolai still stood at the Thunderstone. He flung his arm out in front of him and pointed at the cannons. A regiment of toy soldiers spun on their heels and charged. The creaking of their wooden legs squealed even over the explosions and gunfire, a disturbing cacophony of magic and war whipped together. A cannonball ripped through the toy soldiers' advance, blasting off painted heads and splintering limbs. But the rest of the toys continued undeterred. They had no feelings, no fear, only Nikolai's orders, whatever those were. And then the toy soldiers were upon Pasha's men. The two sides grappled with each other, fighting flesh to wooden hand. A few of Nikolai's troops seized cannons and began to shift where they were aimed. Pasha's soldiers, or were they Yuliana's, raised the butts of their muskets and smashed the toy faces. They took back the cannons and pushed down on the barrels to realign them. Nikolai pushed farther out with his arm, and the cannons flung the men off them, and swiveled their aim straight upward, so that any cannon fire would shoot up and fall directly back down on Pasha's men, rather than on the broken Nyavar that was drowning and freezing the Decembrists. Except one cannon did not pivot completely. It was angled upward, but still slightly toward the river, and the fuse was burnt to its end. In the midst of the chaos and the noise, and her attempts to save the drowning, freezing men, Vika didn't see the cannonball until it was already careening toward her. She gasped, paralyzed for a moment. Then her instincts kicked in, and she commanded the wind to shift the cannonball's path. It was going too fast, though, and its heat carried it straight through the blizzard undeterred. Vika tried to throw herself out of its way, but she was a split second too late, and the cannonball smashed into her left hand. It ripped it off completely. Vika screamed. It was as if a lightning bolt had shot through her arm and lit it on fire from within. She hurtled through the air. The sky went dizzyingly round and round. Everywhere there was shouting and smoke and cannon fire. And then all of it snuffed out to black. Chapter 76.
No!
Pasha shouted as Vika began to tumble from the sky, blood following her like crimson streamers. He kicked his horse into action, and as they charged into the center of the square to try to catch her, he yelled at his infantry,
"Cease fire! Cease fire! Cease fire!"
They finally heard him and stopped their attack. Pasha spurred his horse to jump the last distance and caught Vika just as she was about to hit the ground.
"Stop everything!"
Nikolai yelled at the Decembrists, although not many of them actually remained. At least 1,000 had perished into the icy Nyavar. Hundreds lay dead on the cobblestones. Volkonsky had fled with most of his men in retreat, but the few hundred who remained fighting halted. The toy soldiers went rigid without Nikolai's magic to move them, and the last of the shadow regiments dissolved in smoke.
"Is she all right?"
Nikolai ran to where Pasha held Vika on his horse, as if this wasn't his fault, as if he could simply ask Pasha something like that after all of this. But right now, Pasha didn't care. All he cared about was Vika. He slid off his saddle as his horse came to a halt. He laid Vika on the frozen ground and cradled her head in his lap. Blood continued to gush from her wrist, where her hand had been severed, red mingling with the snow and filling the crevices between the cobblestones. He tore off his uniform jacket, sending buttons flying, and grabbed a handful of his shirt to tear a strip from it. He wrapped her wound tightly with the fabric.
"Vika, can you hear me?"
She didn't respond. Nikolai knelt beside her.
"I'm sorry, Vika. I didn't mean for this to happen."
"What did you think would happen?"
Pasha snapped, suddenly coming back to the reality of what had transpired. Nikolai narrowed his eyes.
"I could have asked the same of you about the end of the game. And yet you didn't learn from my mistakes. You forced her into this."
Nikolai pointed at Vika's bandaged wrist, except the bracelet he was looking for was no longer there. Pasha's stomach lurched. The gold cuff had been torn off with her hand. Vika was nearly as pale as the snow now, as her life drained out red onto the tourniquet he'd made. Pasha held her closer.
"This can't be our final fate."
Chapter 77. Nikolai glared at Pasha. It was his fault that this had happened. If Pasha hadn't turned on Nikolai at the end of the game, then Nikolai wouldn't have had to exact revenge. He could end it now, though. Pasha was right in front of him. Vika, too. She was unconscious, on the brink of death. Nikolai could finish her and eliminate Pasha's fiercest weapon protecting the crown. But at the thought of killing Vika, Nikolai's silhouette flickered. It was already faint after the fatigue of battle, and now when he looked at Vika, his anger sputtered. He had stopped his soldiers' attack for a reason. For Vika. The battle had taken a toll on his strength, as well as on the cold darkness that fueled his obsession with vengeance. And in the moment she fell from the sky, a flash of warmth had flared inside him, a sliver of his past. She was dying, and if she was gone, his hope of one day being Tsar with Vika as his Tsarina could never exist. Nikolai sagged in the snow. What was left of Aijana's energy rumbled inside him.
Don't give up. You're so close to the throne,
it seemed to say. Nikolai hadn't been able to fight the chill before, but the stark reality of a future without Vika sparked the truth of what he wanted. He had spent his entire life feeling alone, and she was his chance of finally having someone else who understood him, someone else who was different, someone with whom to explore and push the bounds of what they could do.
I don't want what Aijana wanted for me. I don't want to be Tsar at the cost of those I love.
He had known this before his mother infected him with her energy. Now he had enough clarity to know it again. He pushed back on the chill that tried to spread inside him. It was all he had left of his mother, but Nikolai could remember her love while still understanding that it was deeply flawed.
Au revoir, Aijana.
Yuliana ran up to where he and Pasha sat with Vika in the snow.
Save her!
Yuliana said to Nikolai.
Do whatever it is you did at the end of the game. Give Vika your energy.
Nikolai shook his head.
I can't.
What do you mean you can't?
Pasha said.
My energy is tainted. It came from my mother. There's too much death and darkness in it.
Even as he said it, he fought internally with the cold that still lived in his veins. But he looked around him to strengthen his resolve. He looked at the soldiers, those who were still alive, standing tense, staring at their two princes and princess on the bloodied snow. At the dead men who littered the cobblestones, and at the ones beyond his line of sight who had drowned in the icy river.
Devil, take me! Look at what that energy has done to me! What I've done with it! I won't transfer that to Vika!
You'd rather have her die?
Pasha asked, head shaking. The space between his brows creased. Nikolai closed his eyes for a brief moment. When he opened them again, he said,
If it means choosing between that and making her live as I have, then yes, she'd be better off dead.
Yuliana lowered herself to the small space of ground between the boys.
Can you transfer someone else's energy to her instead?
She said quietly. She slipped off her glove and offered her hand. Pasha blinked at his sister. Nikolai was surprised too. Yuliana had never shown this sort of tenderness to anyone outside their family before. Yuliana smiled sadly at Pasha.
You love her, so I love her too.
Her unexpected warmth thawed some more of Nikolai's chill.
If it's going to be anyone's energy, Pasha said to Nikolai, give her mine.
He released Yuliana's hand and pulled back his jacket cuff to offer his wrist. Nikolai grimaced at Pasha's bared skin, the blue of his blood visible at his wrist.
I'm not a vampire. Besides, I can't do that. If I try to transfer your energy, mine will get commingled with it as well.
Pasha glared at him for the vampire comment, but he withdrew his arm and wrapped it around Vika instead. Nikolai looked down at her in Pasha's lap. Their clothes and the makeshift tourniquet were soaked with melted snow and blood.
We need to staunch the bleeding, Nikolai said. But I can't heal wounds like she can, even if I had her hand.
His eyes shifted to the statue of Peter the Great.
What about her hand?
Yuliana said.
I wouldn't be able to mend flesh,
Nikolai said, gaze still on the statue.
But perhaps I could manage metal.
What in blazes are you talking about?
Pasha said.
Peter the Great,
Nikolai said.
It's not made of just any metal. It's full of old magic.
Yuliana turned to Nikolai.
Can you use it?
He took a deep breath.
I hope so.
Pasha looked down at Vika, the bandage blood red. He swallowed the growing lump in his throat.
I hope so, too.
Nikolai knelt on the frozen cobblestones by Vika's side. There was every chance this would not work. There was every chance that it would. He fought the instinct to hold his breath until he knew which way it would turn out.
What are you doing?
Yuliana asked.
Shh, Pasha said. Let him work.
Nikolai nodded to him briefly in thanks. All the soldiers, both his and Pasha's, seemed also to follow Pasha's command, for the whole square fell silent. Nikolai hardly noticed, though. All he saw and heard was Vika, unconscious, breathing unsteadily.
Hold on, he thought. Please.
Nikolai rose to his feet and focused on the statue a few yards away. Peter the Great seemed to watch Nikolai in return.
I've never thought that sash across your chest added much to your outfit, Nikolai said,
as if the statue could hear, or care about, his opinions on fashion.
But I believe we can use it for a better purpose.
He reached out and pinched his fingers together, then pulled back, as if he was drawing something in. The sash, indeed, followed his motion. It slipped off Peter the Great and floated through the air like metallic silk. When it reached Nikolai, it melted. The bronze shimmered in the cup of his palms. He turned back to Vika and knelt beside her.
Tools,
he whispered. An entire toolbox worth of gears, cogs, nuts, screws, and springs appeared on a mound of snow next to him. Nikolai looked at Vika's right hand, her only hand, and nodded at it. The liquid bronze trickled upward into the air from his palms and began to replicate the shape of Vika's other hand, but mirror opposite, a metal left to her flesh and bone right. With his own hands now free again, Nikolai plucked a series of tiny, delicate springs from the snow and inserted them into the bronze. The springs sank into the metal hand and found their way to its fingertips. Next, he added levers and gears to the fingers, mechanisms that would allow them to bend. He conjured some oil and squirted it into the metal, willing it to find its way to grease the new joints. Then he crafted a flexible network of lightweight rods, connected by filament-thin wire and tiny screws. It could bend and curl, open and close. He merged this into the shiny metal palm. When finished, the hand appeared cast of smooth bronze, but moved as if both molten and entirely human at the same time.
Et voilà, Nikolai whispered. An artificial hand,
Pasha said, not bothering to hide his wonder.
You're going to attach it?
I'm going to try, Nikolai said. That's where the old magic comes in, I hope. I wouldn't be able to do this on my own.
He gestured at Vika in Pasha's lap.
Transfer her to me, please.
Pasha hesitated.
You must, mon frère,
Yuliana said. Pasha stroked Vika's hair. He closed his eyes. But when he opened them, he shifted Vika gingerly over to Nikolai's lap. Nikolai's pulse raced. Not like the mazurka his and Vika's hearts had twice danced to, but more akin to the frenzied height of a Kazakh folk dance. He took the bronze hand from the air.
Please, let this work.
He charmed the tourniquet to unwind itself from her wrist. It was soaked so thoroughly, the red was nearly black. And Nikolai put everything he had in concentrating on Vika's wrist. He pressed the bronze hand to meet her bloodied stump. As soon as metal touched flesh, the old magic from the statue seeped into her, and the bronze began to meld to her skin. Metallic streaks streamed up her forearm, like glimmering watercolor bleeding into flesh-colored paint. She went from limp to stiff. She inhaled sharply. Vika woke with a start. She looked up at Nikolai, then down as she flexed the bronze fingers of her left hand.
What have you done?
Her brow furrowed.
I'm sorry, he said.
She turned her bronze hand from side to side.
I'm sorry,
he said again, for it was the only thing Nikolai could say. Vika glanced around them, past Nikolai and Pasha and Yuliana, to the soldiers standing watch, no longer fighting, around the square.
"Is it over?"
she asked Pasha. Pasha nodded slowly.
"I think so."
She looked at Nikolai. Through Nikolai. He was so weak now, he was hardly even a shadow anymore. But he nodded too. She frowned at her metal fingers some more. Then she said to Nikolai,
"Quite honestly, it's ugly and heavy, but it will be more satisfying now to punch you."
He didn't know if he was supposed to laugh.
"Why did you do it?"
Vika asked.
"You could have won and taken the throne with me incapacitated."
Nikolai sighed.
"Because when you were hit, when it was like the end of the game and you were going to die again, what I truly wanted broke free of the darkness, and everything became clear. I don't understand."
He looked into her eyes, her fiercely beautiful, defiant eyes. His single dimple crinkled his shadowed cheek, as he smiled fully for the first time in a very long time.
"It's because you said you loved me. And I didn't forget."
Chapter 78.
"I see you,"
Vika said. Nikolai shook his head and looked down at his fading silhouette.
"I'm hardly here."
But he was. He was faint, but her Nikolai was still there, as she'd hoped all along. He had found a piece of himself and fought Aijana's energy. And yet, his mother's darkness still lived within him. Would it come back after Nikolai had rested? Would it take over his body and his will again? If only there were more of the old Nikolai to fight it. Vika looked at her new bronze hand. It was a shame she couldn't simply punch Aijana's energy out of him. She flexed her fingers, still adjusting to the feel of the metal. She was made of so many different parts now. The statue's old magic, Nikolai's energy at the end of the game, Sergei's energy through his bracelet.
"Wait! Nikolai's energy!"
Vika's mouth dropped as the realization hit her. All this time, energy had been transferred to her. But what if Nikolai could reclaim some of his own energy he'd given her during the game? The pure, self-sacrificing Nikolai she'd been searching for might still exist in her own veins.
"Give me your hand,"
she said, as she reached with her human fingers for his shadow ones, so faint they were like dissipating wisps of smoke. But as soon as she touched him, a jolt of heat shot through her. It knocked all the air out of her lungs.
"What's happening?"
Pasha demanded. Neither she nor Nikolai could answer. He was swallowed by light, first a dull glow where she held his hand, but then expanding, brighter and brighter, until they were engulfed by a halo so blinding she had to squint. It was like touching him for the first time at the masquerade, and wanting him to kiss her in his bed, and dancing with him in the volcano dream, all bound in a ribbon of mandarin and time and fire. Vika gasped for air. It was working.
"But why now? Why hasn't this happened before?"
There had been plenty of interaction between the two of them recently. But there had always been something between her and Nikolai. An egg, a dream, misguided ambition. Now, though, there was nothing separating them. Their connection was both torment and rapture. It was bewildering yet simple, wretched yet joyous, but in a way that Vika could not and did not wish to escape. It was life, compacted to its essence. As his old energy, and some of her own, flowed back to him, Vika could also feel the dark, chilly edges of Aijana's energy. Vika squeezed Nikolai's hand. His shadow began to recede where they touched, like spilled ink dripping away from his fingertips back into an unseen well. The coldness of Aijana's energy also drew back, chased away by the warmth that tumbled from Vika's body.
"I know this energy,"
Nikolai whispered. Vika imagined pushing harder on his shadow, and more of it fell away. Nikolai's human form slowly returned, traveling first from his fingertips and up his arm, then across his torso, into his other arm, his legs, his feet. It spread over his collarbone, where the wand scar had once been, up his neck, along the line of his jaw, and over the sharp planes of his cheeks. The shadow had receded. Vika gasped, hand over mouth, hardly believing who was before her. But it was him again. Finally. Her Nikolai. He looked down at himself, held his arms out and turned them from side to side, touched his face and his chest, all as if not quite believing. Finally, though, he looked at Vika.
"You saved me. You saved me," she said.
"Perhaps we saved each other. It seems we have a habit of doing that."
Vika looked from her own hand to Nikolai's, now also flesh and blood. Then she laughed, not so much from happiness, but from extraordinary, overwhelming relief.
"Yes, it seems we do."
Chapter 79. Pasha helplessly watched the halo surrounding Vika and Nikolai.
"It's how they defied the game, isn't it?"
Yuliana said, linking her arm through his and gesturing at the same time at the halo.
"They're part of each other, and stronger when united."
There was a pain in Pasha's chest, the dying of hope that Vika would choose him. But he gritted his teeth and nodded.
"It was never a choice," he realized. "It was always Nikolai, whether any of us knew it or not."
He stood, pulling his sister up with him.
"This is what Plato meant," he said,
although mostly to himself,
"when he wrote of two broken halves finding each other."
Nikolai looked at him and shook his head.
"I don't believe that. Or more accurately, it's only part of what we're all looking for."
Pasha stepped back. He wasn't surprised that Nikolai knew which allegory he spoke of. They'd always had a shared love of books. But he was surprised at Nikolai's tone. It was almost as if they were in the library in the Winter Palace, debating philosophy. Friends again.
"What do you mean?"
he asked, mindful of the fragility of this conversation. Was it possible to recapture the past, to mend what they'd broken? Pasha ran his hands through his hair.
"I mean, your interpretation contemplates only romantic love,"
Nikolai said quietly, as if he too understood the significance of their conversation.
"But what about family? And friendship? I think we've all been blind to the importance of those. Me, most of all."
He rose and helped Vika up. When he released her hand, their halo of light vanished. Pasha exhaled. It had been almost too intimate seeing them glow together like that.
"So, you're saying..."
Yuliana linked her arm through his.
"The four of us here are the broken halves we've been looking for all along."
Pasha held tightly to her. He was beginning to understand what Nikolai meant. Vika and Nikolai together made a whole. But so did Pasha and Yuliana, as family. And Pasha and Nikolai, not only as brothers, but also as friends. Vika stood between him and Nikolai. She looked back and forth at them, pausing also to look at herself, as if she were a fragile bridge that connected them. Perhaps she was. She turned slowly to Nikolai.
"The darkness is gone from your veins. You're you again, right?"
He nodded.
"Then forgive Pasha for what he did to us at the end of the game."
Her voice took on a sterner quality, or perhaps more accurately, a fiery one. She was very much the passionate, resolute girl from the woods Pasha and Nikolai had encountered before the game.
"Grief and fear can twist even the best of us to do what we shouldn't,"
Vika said to Nikolai.
"Give up the fight for the crown." "It's not you, Nikolai."
She shook her head, but her expression softened.
"It was never what you wanted. Not really, anyway."
He looked at the death surrounding them, at the soldiers who stood silently, obediently, waiting for their commands.
Blazes! What have I done?
Nikolai closed his eyes and scrubbed at the back of his neck, but then he nodded again.
You're right. All I ever truly wanted was to belong to St. Petersburg, to a family, to you.
Pasha's heart leaped into his throat for more than one reason. Vika turned to face him next.
Pasha, forgive and pardon Nikolai. He wasn't himself, and the Decembrists had already plotted against you and your family ages ago. Nikolai was merely a convenient means to an end for them.
Out of the corner of his eye, Pasha saw Nikolai flinch at Vika's description of his role, belittled. He may have been humbled, but he still had plenty of pride. It was that very pride that had blown up and propelled Nikolai to pursue the throne, to try to kill Pasha twice. Could he forgive so easily? And yet, look what not forgiving had led them to. Pasha had essentially sentenced Nikolai to death at the end of the game. Then Nikolai had returned the favor. It was not the most natural thing in the world to forgive your brother for attempting to murder you, but Nikolai was willing to swallow a great deal of pride to forgive Pasha. Pasha could do the same.
We've both made mistakes, he said. Enormous ones.
Nikolai scrubbed the back of his neck.
Yes, we have. I am eternally sorry. Words do not suffice.
Pasha had to lean on Yuliana, so great was his relief.
I am sorry, too. For the end of the game. For everything. Mon frère,
Nikolai said. Pasha smiled.
Mon frère.
Yuliana touched Vika's shoulder, and Vika stepped back, leaving space between Pasha and Nikolai. Pasha crossed the short distance and pulled Nikolai into an embrace. Nikolai tensed for a moment. Then he threw his arms around Pasha, too. Together, they were whole. Around them, the soldiers began to murmur their confusion over what the prince's reconciliation meant. Nikolai released Pasha from their embrace and said,
I fear I've slashed open a wound in Russia's side with this coup.
Pasha shook his head.
Yes. But at the same time, it would have happened, one way or another, as Vika pointed out. If our father hadn't died, the Decembrists had been planning to rise against him next summer anyhow. They only moved sooner because they thought we wouldn't be organized enough to counter them. But they didn't account for Vika and Yuliana. Or you, Nikolai said. I underestimated you as well.
Vika smiled at them and took Nikolai's hand. They glowed again as if the sun shone down on them with particular favor. But this time, Pasha didn't wince. He would get used to it.
Now that you have all made up, Yuliana said, what shall we do with the Decembrists?
Pasha looked at the square. Bodies lay splayed on the cobblestones, eyes wide but empty. His men had begun rounding up the rebels who were still alive. He thought he recognized Ilya in the distance, near the Nevar, arms up in surrender. Perhaps Pasha was wrong, but he was quite certain he wasn't. His stomach turned. Yet he didn't let the nausea take over. As Tsar, there would be many more difficult moments like these. He forced himself to look away.
Pasha?
Yuliana asked. He took several breaths.
Bury the dead with all the proper rites. Send the police to arrest those who fled. And then?
And then what? Pasha looked at Ilya once more. He'd been a good guard. A friend, almost. A veil of sadness descended upon everything Pasha could see. But Ilya must have had his reasons, just as Pasha and Nikolai had for what they'd done. And if Pasha could forgive himself and Nikolai, if he could understand that they were real people who'd made mistakes, then he could understand the Decembrists. Pasha would allow himself to be sad, and angry, and everything in between. But he would also learn from his mistakes, and he would rule the empire his way, with compassion and love, even for his enemies. We'll find a way to punish them, he said, turning away from Ilya for the last time. But no executions. And while